Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. When the zombie apocalypse comes, again, how will it sound? Well, it might sound vaguely familiar to anyone who grew up listening to the emergency broadcast system in Cold War America. Composer Marco Beltrami explains how he scored one of this summer's most hotly anticipated blockbusters, World War Z. It's part of our week-long series looking at the summer movie season and its soundtracks. Also, live tango music, or hard tango to be more precise, from J.P. Joffre's band. Now, before the zombies take over the screen, meet Francis. Francis is a 27-year-old New Yorker who's struggling to make it as a dancer in the new Noah Baumbach film, Frances Ha. She's also growing apart from her close friend and roommate, Sophie.
What are we doing with our day?
I gotta get going around 5.
I thought we were hanging out.
We are.
All day.
I have plans with Patch tonight, I told you.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. I texted that to you.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. Here.
We're not doing that. It's not court.
I did text you, though.
I believe you.
You don't have to believe me. I did text you.
The two friends do grow apart, and Frances is left to fend for herself in her personal life and in her career. Frances Ha is a lighthearted portrayal of what it's like being a young New Yorker who's on the verge of not being so young anymore. And it's a love story, kind of. It was written by Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig, who stars as Frances, and who joins us today for one of our Pick 3 segments. Now, one of the film's most memorable moments revolves around this David Bowie song. Hear all about it, but first, Greta Gerwig, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you so much. I love this show.
Well, thank you. Frances Ha is this kind of interesting movie, sort of a love story that's not a romance necessarily. It seems to be like a love story between your character and the city of New York. Would that be fair to say?
I would say it's a love story about my character in New York, also about friendship and ambition. It's, there's no traditional heterosexual love story in it, but it definitely hits all the beats of what that kind of movie is without actually having the content of that kind of movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm really proud of the fact that it's like that, but we didn't intend to have it be like that. It just kind of came out of the characters and the writing.
Well, the song Modern Love, this David Bowie tune from the 80s, it appears in the film in a kind of pivotal sequence where Frances, your character, is, I'll say, hurtling/dancing down the street. Mm-hmm. What were you actually listening to while filming that? Did you actually have the song going?
No. You know, the thing was, actually, I had nothing going because I couldn't have headphones in and they couldn't be blasting music from the truck. So I was listening to music before I ran and then running to the music in my head, basically. And I listened to Modern Love and I also listened to Lay My Love. I just that kind of
this,
like...
This John Cale,
yeah,
Brian
yeah.
Eno song.
I also listened to that because I think it's a great running song and it has a lot of, it's less bombastic, it's more rhythmic, but it's also a great one to run to.
So what street is that you're running down?
That's East Broadway. East Broadway, I didn't even know East Broadway existed for a long time. I knew there was a West Broadway and a Broadway, but I didn't know there was an East Broadway. So that was the stretch between, it's East Broadway and Canal Street, mm-hmm. and then we ran down to Chatham Square.
So while you're doing that, so then the Bowie song gets plugged in later.
Yeah.
Was that already, who did you choose that? Did Noah choose that?
Well, we both loved that song, and we tried a lot of different songs, and we just kept coming back to that one. And I think part of the reason was Noah has like a very direct experience with that song, which was that when he was that was like one of the first records he remembers having his own money to buy, and he bought, and he said he listened to Modern Love over and over and over again, like he couldn't get enough of it. And we talked a lot about pop music being great pop music when it's over, you just want to play the song again right away,
right.
And that it just feels like put it on again. And we talked about wanting the movie to feel like a pop song, that when it's over there's a feeling of like put it on again. And you know, you can't guarantee that you'll make a movie that feels like that, but I think if you keep it in mind, it definitely influences the way that it feels. So it, I mean, I just think it's such a great, I mean, it's an amazing song, and it's so it's the best song to run to.
And appears in this film called Frances Ha, which is in theaters now. Greta Gerwig stars in it, co-wrote it with director Noah Baumbach. The film's in black and white.
Yeah.
Reminds me, and I'm sure many, many other people, of Manhattan, the Woody Allen film. Was that intentional?
Well, it wasn't intentional to evoke Manhattan, but it was intentional, especially the way the black and white looks was intentionally looking at the Gordon Willis photography in Manhattan and that kind of warm, silvery black and white that it was so beautiful. And it's the kind of black and white where if someone steps into shadow, you can still feel their face because the black and white it just has more depth. That it's not so starkly contrasty. So you can feel shadow. And so it was actually while we were writing the script, Noah and the DP, Sam Levy, and our
DP being the director of
director of photography, and our colorist and post-production person, Pascal Danjean, they were doing all these tests with different cameras and different finishing processes to get this look. So while it wasn't, while we weren't thinking, oh, this is our tip of the hat to Manhattan, it definitely, what the Gordon Willis photography was talked about a lot.
We're speaking with Greta Gerwig, who stars in and co-wrote this film, Frances Ha, with Noah Baumbach. It's in theaters now. And we actually asked you, Greta, here to, you know, share a pick three with us.
Yes.
the David Bowie song, Modern Love, obviously a pivotal moment in the film. Are you a Bowie fan just in the course of being a music listener?
Yes. I mean, I did pick a Bowie song for my pick three. We were talking about this before, but picking three songs is so intimidating. But I love David Bowie. I remember when I really heard David Bowie for the first time, and I kind of came to it late. I was in college already, and I loved it so much, and I felt like I couldn't believe that I had never really heard any of it before. And
what was it that you heard first?
Space Oddity. I mean, that was, and then I, anyway, I mean, should I start explaining the songs or do I not do that yet?
Okay, let's get into it.
Okay.
You picked the song 5 Years, which is the
right
opener from Ziggy Stardust.
I did. I did 5 Years because when I first heard it, was also in college, and I would listen to it. I had the same experience of listening to it over and over again. And there's this one particular part in it where it builds to this point where it's like the apex of the song for me. And he says, "I kiss you, you're beautiful, I want you to walk." And it's like the most epic, like I felt like if there was any musical expression of what it must feel like to be hopelessly in love, it was that, like this sort of like, ugh, it was, anyway, so I would, you know, and I think I was, you know, 18 or 19, and I had very dramatic emotions, as I do now, and I felt like David Bowie was the only person who could kind of give it the scope that it deserved.
As the world has 5 years
before
it comes crumbling around.
I know. And it just felt like, I think it's also what it feels like to be young. You feel like you've got 5 years left before you're old or something, which I didn't, you know, of course I don't think now, but I think then it feels like, oh my God, everything's ending.
Well, this is the song, 5 Years, picked for us by Greta Gerwig, and taken from David Bowie's 1972 album, Ziggy Stardust.
Of a Cadillac, cop knelt and kissed the feet of a priest, and a queer threw up the sight of that. I think I saw you in an ice cream parlor, drinking milkshakes cold and long, smiling and waving and looking so fine. Don't think you knew you were in the song. It was cold and it rained, so I felt like an actor, and I thought of more, and I wanted to get back there. Your face, your race, the way that you talk, I kiss you, you're beautiful, I want you to walk. We got 5 years stuck on by, 5 years, what a surprise we got.
David Bowie from the album Ziggy Stardust, full name The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, and the song 5 Years. Greta Gerwig, the actor and writer, is with me on Soundcheck. Her current film, Frances Ha, is in theaters. Since I, too, am a lifelong, rabid David Bowie fan, this conversation could very quickly spiral into...
I know.
Into some kind of...
Just, like, nerdy.
Yeah.
No, I love David. I mean, even just listening to it now, I was like, God, this is such a great song.
And it's like, well, now I need to hear the rest of the record.
I know. I feel like I've listened to all these records and all these songs so many times, and I still choose them every day. Yeah. I never get tired of them. I just think they're so expansive and wonderful.
Well, and, you know, the love in the face of obstacle, as you were describing this song, you know, is something that he has done so well. I mean, Heroes. And even some of the stuff on the new record, you know?
I know. I like the new record. I think that there's some really, like, great stuff on it. Yeah. I just think his voice is just so emotional.
Yeah.
So.
All right, but since I don't want us to go down rabbit hole, let's move on to the second of your pick three. Are you a music theater person?
Yeah, well, I wanted to pick something from musical theater because I really love musical theater a lot. I think it's one of, I mean, it really is such an American art form. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's an idea that it's, I think sometimes when people think about it, they think it's just cheesy, or like people singing about their feelings in a cheesy way. But I find it so moving to watch people singing on stage. I mean, I think it's just the most sincere art form to me. And I think that's something I always really respond to. And I mean, Sondheim is sort of the king of all for me, and for most musical theater people. I mean, there's tons of musical theater people I love, but he's one of the greatest to me.
And sort of tellingly, you've chosen a song from Company,
yes,
which is, like the film Frances Ha, a song about people dealing with New York.
Yeah, well,
It's a series of songs.
Yeah, it's a... I mean, the musical is all around this man, Robert's 35th birthday, and I love this musical so much. I could pick any of the songs from this. It's like, and the lyrics are so smart and sad and strange, and I mean, I just love the feeling of it. And there's actually a great movie called The Making of the Company Original Broadway Cast Recording, and it's all of them in 1970, and Elaine Stritch and Stephen Sondheim, and they record for like 14 hours. They're in a room, and it's the 70s, so of course everybody's like chain smoking and and singing, and it's incredible because it's like, you know, in a studio, they're all singing together in a studio, and Sondheim's like browbeating Elaine Stritch to get just the perfect syncopation and the perfect ache in her voice, and it's like, I mean, I love music documentaries, and this is like the ultimate musical documentary for me. And anyway,
I'm being told by the gang in the control room that it's D.A. Pennebaker who directed that documentary.
That's right.
Same guy who directed the documentary about David Bowie's last performance with the Spiders from Mars. So there we go. We're back to Bowie.
All roads lead back to Bowie. No, it's just an incredible documentary, and the songs are great. And this song, I actually, when I moved to New York, I didn't have an iPod, and so I used to take my Discman with the company original cast recording.
Did you move here from the 1980s?
I just Discman? It was 2002, and I didn't have an iPod yet. And I used to take my original cast recording and listen to this song standing at the intersection, like underneath Times Square, where it's the NRQW and the 123 and the 7 all transferring at the same time. And it's a song that kind of catches the loneliness of New York, but also it soars at some point and it moves into a major key, and it makes you excited for the city instead of scared of it, and then it moves back into this kind of minor sounding patter. And there's nothing else to me that musically is the experience of the subway as much as this song.
Another 100 People is the name of the song, from Stephen Sondheim's Company. And in the role of Marta singing the song is Pamela Myers.
Another 100 people just got off of the train and came up through the ground line. Another 100 people just got off of the bus and are looking around at another 100 people who got off of the plane and are looking at us who got off of the train and the plane and the bus maybe yesterday. It's a city of strangers. Some come to work, some to play. A city of strangers. Some come to stare, some to stay. And every day crowded streets and the guarded parks, by the rusty fountains and the dusty trees with the battered box. And they walk together past the postcard walls with the crude remorse. And they made a party through the friends of friends who they never know. Will you pick me up or do I meet you there? Shall we let it go? Did you get my message? Because I looked in vain. Can we see each other Tuesday? And another 100 people just got off of the train.
Music from Stephen Sondheim's Company from 1970, the original cast recording, with Pamela Myers singing Another 100 People. Greta Gerwig, the actor and writer, is with me on Soundcheck today. Her current film, Frances Ha, is in theaters now, like Stephen Sondheim's Company. You know, young people dealing with love and maturity and the big city of New York. So the Bowie song, 1972, the Sondheim song, 1970.
Yes.
And now...
I know.
Now Nirvana, but not the one people are thinking about.
No.
1968, the first Nirvana, has nothing to do with Kurt Cobain, except that they later sued him for using the name.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I don't know how it turned out, but I assume they lost. Nirvana.
Yeah.
How did this happen?
I picked this song for a couple of reasons. The first reason was, like, I like a lot of people, learn about music through my friends. And this album was given to me by someone when I shot the movie Greenberg in Los Angeles. I was playing a character who is a singer, wants to be a singer, sort of does it on her free time, not really pursuing it directly. But and I was working with a guy playing guitar because we were recording a Judy Sill song. And anyway, I was talking about how much I love Judy Sill, but I hadn't known Judy Sill. And he said, I've got so much stuff you don't know. And he gave me all these amazing songs and albums. And this was one of them. And I just feel, for me, like music, like so many arts, it really is it really relies on community. And whether it's on the internet or in life, I think I don't think there's any shame in saying that you found someone pointed you to it.
Absolutely. I mean, I thought when you said community, I thought you were going to say a different, I thought you were going for curated or curatorial.
Oh,
it's,
no.
It's great to have somebody sort of curating an experience for you when there's so much out there.
There is. And I think it's like an amazing, I mean, we live in an amazing time where you can really put your hands on lots of stuff, but sometimes having so much available to you can be daunting. And, I really value my friends who go through old records and take the time to make MP3s out of them. And I mean, there's so many songs that I've learned like that. I mean, this is one of them. I mean, like the Phil Spector recording of Zippity Doodah, or like Dwight Twilley's Looking for the Magic. I would have never known these things if it weren't for people who are taking the time. So in some ways, it was a tip of the hat to, I don't know, the people in my life who've given me good music. Anyway, going back to Nirvana, no, it's just a great song, and it's one of those songs that when I heard it, I was like, I can't believe this is not
better known.
I can't believe this isn't used to sell cars. Like, it's a great song. It's like a song. I was like, if you put this in a commercial, I'd pretty much buy the product. and it's got like percussive piano, and it's kind of like psychedelic, but it sort of sounds like Beatles, but also a Bond soundtrack. It's odd.
Yeah, it's, you know, kind of the first wave of progressive rock out of England in the late 60s.
Yeah, it's good. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I just want to back up to one thing about your character in the other movie, in Greenberg. Did you ever want to sing?
Well, I sang in high school with you know, musical theater, and with my choir. But I never had a voice that was pure enough to be a true musical theater voice, and I never had a voice that was interesting enough to be a rock and roll voice. So that leaves you kind of just no. But I think everybody has a dream to like front a band. So I will admit I've had the dream, but I never came close.
Greta Gerwig with me on Soundcheck, sharing her pick three. The third of the three is this song called Rainbow Chaser from the 1960s British band Nirvana. Greta, congratulations on the success of the movie Frances Ha. It's in theaters now, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
I can't talk to him, and I can love him. Many miles to go, how many bridges do you cross? Winter rain and snow, over mountains high and low. I can't talk to him.
Up next, we'll hear about music from a very different summer movie, World War Z. Composer Marco Beltrami talks about creating music for the zombie apocalypse. And later, tango from J.P. Joffre. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This week on the show, we're looking at the music of summer movies, and one of the most eagerly anticipated films this summer is the action flick World War Z, about an international struggle against a zombie pandemic. Marco Beltrami composed the score for the film. As you can hear in the background, no one's brains are being eaten just yet. But Marco, who did the music for Resident Evil, The Hurt Locker, and 310 to Yuma, has hit upon a novel way of scoring the more zombie-licious moments in the film World War Z. Marco, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So now you got your start doing horror films, Wes Craven, the Scream series, the recent zombie comedy Warm Bodies. So is this the undead? Is this your specialty?
you know, I don't know if it's my specialty. I started out in coming from more of a concert music background, and you know, it just turns out that 20th century music techniques lend themselves really well to scary movies and horror movies. But
as we saw in The Shining, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I have to admit that I really don't care for horror movies all that much, because I think mainly it's just because I'm a cheap scare. But for whatever reason, it's become easy for me to do, and I enjoy it.
Now, that opening track that we were just hearing, The Lane Family, that sounds like it could be for a Western. Is this a bit of musical misdirection on your part?
You know, I think Westerns are just happen to be in my blood. I've been a fan of especially, you know, like Morricone spaghetti Western since I've been very little. I think I can't get rid of it.
Yeah. The much of the score is percussion is hugely important in this score, as it has been for a number of your other scores in recent years. Did the theme of the zombie apocalypse drive some of the choices of percussion that you made?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, it's really an adrenaline-fueled quest here for discovering, you know, it's a mystery, but figuring out what's going on. And that suggested a lot of percussion, because I was very conscious of the story point that the zombies perpetuate themselves through biting and through their teeth. And so I was thinking it might be neat to have an element, a percussive element that's actually derived from teeth. And I was speaking with a friend of mine who was actually making a movie, Tommy Lee Jones, and he said, well, you know, in Texas, where I'm from, we have these wild feral pigs called javelinas, and they actually communicate with their jaws. So Buck, who's my partner at the studio, ordered some javelina skulls, and we started doing experiments with them. Yeah, you can, actually. And we started doing experiments, putting like contact microphones inside the skull and recording them and coming up with really neat rhythmical textures, because Buck spent a good time processing that and coming up with some of the neat rhythms. And you hear it throughout the score.
Is,
you know,
Buck,
that New Jersey Mart. Yeah.
Is Buck Sanders?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
With whom you worked on Warm Bodies, right?
Warm Bodies, and yeah, we actually did the Hurt Locker together.
Locker, right. So this New Jersey Mart, this cue from the film, we're hearing those kind of clicking and gnashing sounds from these wild pig skulls as part of the rhythm track. Is that it?
Yes. Yes, that's exactly what you're hearing. It's been worked with electronically somewhat, but that's the underlying basis for the rhythm in it.
We're speaking with Marco Beltrami about his score for the new movie World War Z, The Sound of Zombies, using the skulls of these feral pigs from Texas. Just a little bit from the score to the film World War Z by my guest Marco Beltrami. The film comes out on Friday. The soundtrack was released yesterday. Marco's on soundcheck with us today, describing himself as a cheap scare. So we've determined you're more a fan of Westerns than horror movies. Did you read the book, World War Z?
No. I started working on the project, read the script. From what I understand, there is a lot of differences between the two.
Right. Well, the book is very episodic, and the film, you know, follows a single character, so the Brad Pitt character, obviously. So it is quite different. I understand that most of your score, or much of it, is based on the American emergency broadcast system alert sound. Is that right?
Yeah, in fact, you can hear it right where you stop that cue. There's like a high electronic sound.
Yeah.
And that is actually a processing of the EBS sound. When I first screened the movie, they showed me the beginning, this scene that takes place in Philadelphia, and it cuts to just an emergency broadcast signal. And so I was thinking, well, that might be a great way to find a sort of a motive or a something that could develop into the harmonic and melodic language of the film. Mm-hmm. And so again, what I did with Buck's help was we just ordered some tuning forks that are tuned a major second apart, which is what the emergency broadcast signal is. And
so like C and D, sort of for example.
Yeah, so you're exactly. So that's at its purest state. And from there, we worked with processing that. And I would say most of it derives from this very simple interval.
Yeah. Now, were you aware that the FCC prohibits radio stations from broadcasting that sound, the EBS sound, except, of course, in an emergency?
I'm
asking you, I guess, here, Marco, is are you getting us in trouble here if I play a little bit more from this? Score?
No, I think it's pretty well hidden and pretty well.
All right, let's.
I mean, it's a common interval.
You mentioned Philadelphia, this kind of pivotal scene. In the book, it's Yonkers, but in the movie, it's Philly. And this is some of the score that Marco Beltrami has written for the film World War Z. A little bit from the Philadelphia section of the soundtrack to the film World War Z by Marco Beltrami, who's with me on soundcheck. The score came out yesterday. The film is out on Friday. World War Z is the name of it. The zombie apocalypse returns yet again. And, boy, Marco, that is some pretty alarming music inspired by the emergency broadcast system. Those big brassy chords, are they derived from that siren sound as well?
Yeah, they are actually, because you know it's a it's basically just a big low minor triad, but the when it's played, the notes bend outward, and they bend outward by a whole step, which is the same amount. I mean, a lot of this stuff is academic at some point,
yeah.
You know, but musical geek stuff. But
hey,
but
I'm a musical geek.
Yeah, I mean, it pervades the score. Even the interval that begins that sequence that you played is major second. So,
mm-hmm. So how different was your approach to World War Z from, say, something like The Hurt Locker or 310 to Yuma, you know, any of your other non-horror film scores?
Hurt Locker to me was very horrific. But, you know, the difference here was that this was it's a big epic action summer movie. It has to be a little bit of a ride to the Hurt Locker. You know, the whole idea was that it was almost quasi documentarial, and the music really had to not call any attention to itself at all. You know, the main thing there was that we worked to integrate the sound environment of the film itself into the musical language, so that there was almost a blur of the boundaries, and you're not sure what it was, mainly just to intensify the experience, which was also done in World War Z to a certain extent. But it's, you know, I mean, you heard the bombastic drums and everything that's going on. It's an adrenaline-fueled score.
Yeah. Now, very different from your last zombie movie, which was Warm Bodies. a kind of zombie comedy, I guess. I mean, the track titles on your score for Warm Bodies are full of in-jokes for rock fans. You know, songs, track titles like I Want to Hold Your Hand, Might as Well Jump, Bad Brains, the name of a great early punk slash reggae band. Yeah. And the score starts with something called Music for Airport Zombies. Is this a kind of a nod to Brian Eno's Music for Airports?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, we have to get our kicks somehow. We're stuck in dark rooms all day long. So, you know, making up creative titles for the tracks is something that's a lot of fun to do. Usually they get vetoed. There's a process that the studio goes through where they, you know, only a third of what we come up with gets used. So that's where that came from.
We're speaking with Marco Beltrami. This also is zombie music, but for a very different film, the recent movie called Warm Bodies. Believe it or not, that is also zombie music from Marco Beltrami, his score to World War Z, we've been hearing a bit of, but that is from the film Warm Bodies, and it's called Music for Airport Zombies. So, Marco, you mentioned before you have classical training, but you've done a lot of work with, you know, in the rock world with Marilyn Manson on the score to Resident Evil, Guns N' Roses working with them on the long-awaited Chinese Democracy. Will those tracks that you did with Guns N' Roses that didn't make the final album, will they ever see the light of day?
Oh, I really don't know. I mean, I've been a little bit out of the loop from that for quite some time. I have no idea. I mean, there was 8 tracks total that I worked on.
You did orchestrations for them, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's next on your plate? You're doing Wolverine? You got multiple film scores going at once?
Well, this weekend I'm recording the score to Carrie, another scary movie, a remake of Carrie. But yeah, Wolverine comes out next, and then back with Tommy Lee Jones doing this amazing film that he's doing called The Homesman.
All right. Well, World War Z comes out on Friday, but Marco Beltrami's score is out now, came out yesterday. He's been with us from the studios of NPR West in California. And Marco, congratulations. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
This is Soundcheck. Our summer movie music series continues tomorrow with the creative team behind the new sci-fi comedy, The History of Future Folk. It's about two aliens who were supposed to lay waste to Earth, but instead stick around and start a bluegrass band. The stars of the film will play in our studio tomorrow on Soundcheck. Up next, the bandoneon player J.P. Joffre hails from Argentina. He joins us here in our New York studio to play live. Thank you. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Don't let your ears deceive you. That may sound like an accordion playing the Beatles' I Am the Walrus, but it's not. It's a bandoneon playing the Beatles' I Am the Walrus, played by the Argentine musician and composer J.P. Joffre. We'll find out just what the difference is between an accordion and a bandoneon in a moment. But first, here is J.P. Joffre and his quintet to play live in the Soundcheck studio. This is the title track from his new album called Hard Tango. Thank you. that is called Hard Tango, live performance from the J.P. Joffre Quintet here in the Soundcheck studio, featuring J.P. Joffre playing the bandoneon, with Feng Chinhui playing the violin, Jessica Meyer the viola, Yoni Levyatov at our piano, and Christopher J. playing the double bass. J.P., welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, John. Thank you so much for having us.
So Hard Tango, is that more than just a title? Is that kind of a statement of a new kind of tango?
Yes, well, it started being just a song, the song we just played, and I wrote it on the A train and going to a rehearsal. And
so a very New York tango.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was inspired in the city.
Mm-hmm. Well, first there was tango. Then there was Nuevo Tango, which the late Astor Piazzolla is thought of as having started. And he got a lot of his inspiration from New York. He lived here for many years. And it seems like your quintet is perhaps inspired or modeled on his quintet, with the classical strings being brought in.
Yes, of course. Actually, I decided I wanted to be a composer and bandoneon player when I heard Piazzolla. That was the inspiration.
Mm-hmm. So were you a bandoneon player as a kid, or did you try other instruments first?
Well, I actually was a drummer, and I had my heavy metal band.
Ah.
When I had my own band, I used to sing the melodies to the guitarist. I used to say, hey, play chan, 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 chan. And one of the guitarists told me, you should be a composer, man, not a drummer. And I studied, orchestration, harmony. I went to the conservatory, music theories. Mm-hmm. And eventually, when I heard Piazzolla, I thought, this is the thing I want to do.
So now explain what the difference is between the bandoneon and the accordion, which most Americans are more familiar with.
Well, the main difference is the keyboard. The keyboard is totally different. We have every button in the bandoneon plays two notes. One note when you open the bellows, and the same button when you close the bellows, change the pitch. Mm-hmm. And it's never the same.
So
interval.
Kind of like a harmonica, where
it's
blow in or blow out, you get a different note.
Yes. And this the right keyboard is different from the left keyboard, so we had to practice four keyboards, two keyboards opening and two keyboards closing.
Wow. And you don't have, the accordion has on the right side, it has what looks like a piano keyboard.
Right.
Yours, it's buttons on both sides?
We have buttons in both sides.
So it's a concertina, basically.
It's sort of a concertina.
Except really big. The bellows are,
yeah.
You have to have your knee up so the bellows can rest on your knee because it's such a long instrument.
Right. And the instrument was made in Germany. It was made to play religious music at the church. That's why if you play bandoneon on a church, it literally sounds like an organ.
Right, right. Although, as I understand it, tango really didn't grow out of the church, did it?
The instrument ended up in Buenos Aires playing in cabarets.
In cabarets kind of rough bars by the docks and things like that. Yeah. You've released this album called Hard Tango, and you and the quintet will be doing a CD release show at Joe's Pub next Wednesday, June 26th. The next song you're going to play for us is not on that record, though. It's After the Rain.
Yes, it's a new piece.
It's an original work?
Yes.
Okay, I was wondering if maybe it was a cover of the John Coltrane or something like that. So this is even newer than the record.
Yes, this is one of my latest compositions. And I wrote it 2 months ago, and it's called After the Rain.
All right, let's hear it. J.P. Joffre is the composer and picking up the bandoneon, and once again will be leading his quintet here in the Soundcheck studio. The CD release show for the album Hard Tango is at Joe's Pub next Wednesday. And this, a new song, not yet recorded, called After the Rain.
Thank you.
Well, that was lovely. J.P. Joffre and his quintet with a live performance of a new song called After the Rain. The album's called Hard Tango. The album is out now, and the quintet playing here in the Soundcheck studio today in advance of their CD release show at Joe's Pub next Wednesday. J.P., it's been a pleasure having you in the quintet performing for us today. Congratulations on the record. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor for us, and thank you so much for having us.
That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. Tomorrow, join us online at 2 p.m. to hear a live performance from the singer-songwriter Michael Cronin. His new album got a rave review from Pitchfork. Find out why when Michael Cronin performs in the studio tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern, on soundcheck.org. Then on the air at 9, we'll talk with the director and the two stars of the new sci-fi comedy film, The History of Future Folk, and an in-studio performance by the undisputed kings of Cajun music, Beausoleil. They'll play songs from a new album called From Bamako to Carencrow. Our theme song was composed by the New York keyboardist Marco Benevento. It's called Eagle Rock. You can find out more about Marco and his music at soundcheck.org. That does it for tonight's show. Join us back here tomorrow night at 9 for another. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.